Everybody. So we're going to be carrying over till Wednesday, May 20th, House Bill 3225, House Bill 3470, and we will be meeting on Thursday, May 21st in lieu of Friday, so we don't have to be here on Friday. With that.
I'm sorry, would you repeat the numbers, Madam Chair?
3225, 3470. Moving to Wednesday. So if you're here for either of those bills, come back Wednesday. Okay.
25 and what?
With that, open a work session for the introduction of committee measures. Vice Chair Smith Warner.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, I move LC 4259 be introduced as a committee measure.
Vice Chair Smith-Warner has moved LC 4259 be introduced as a committee measure. Any discussion?
I have no idea what it is.
So a yes vote on introducing the committee measure does not indicate support of the measure, just support of the process.
I'm sure that's true.
Yes.
Madam Chair, can I nevertheless know what it is?
Yes.
And Madam Chair, members of the committee, LC 4259 states the Department of Agriculture Authority to establish control areas, including establishment for purpose of eradicating or excluding genetically engineered commodity plants. It authorizes department to establish upon petition or for cause market production districts and to administer districts to provide for coexistence in a manner that reduces or eliminates existing or potential conflicts between activities related to commercial production of commodity plants that are genetically engineered and activities related to commercial production of commodity plants that are not genetically engineered.
Madam Chair, isn't this the same bill that was in rurals? Yeah, I mean, rural communities and land use.
Madam Chair, Representative McLean, in my understanding is it is very similar to that bill.
All right, I'll be voting no because we've already had a policy committee look at this. We had hearings on it, and it is quite an extraordinary that the majority party would then introduce the same bill and rules, so I'm going to be a no.
Fair enough. Okay, and with that, any other discussion?
I'm going to do a roll.
Yes, we'll do a roll call. Absolutely. With that, would you call the roll, Zoe?
Representative Barnhart.
Aye.
No.
Representative Nose?
Aye.
Representative Rayfield?
Yes.
Representative Wilson?
No.
Vice Chair Gilliam?
No.
Vice Chair Smith Warner?
Aye.
Chair Boyle?
Aye. With that, LC is introduced. Close the work session. Open a work session on House Bill 2198. Erin, will you describe the measure?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. House Bill 2198 defines affordable housing, area median income, and development for purposes of statute, directs Oregon Housing and Community Services to develop and implement the Affordable Family Housing Development Program, creates Affordable Family Housing Development Fund within General Fund, allows Oregon Housing and Community Services to acquire, construct, develop, improve, rehabilitate, and own affordable housing for families with children and make and administer to support such projects, requires report to Legislative Assembly on or before February 1st, 2016. You have two amendments before you today. The -A2 amendment changes program name to Local Innovation and Fast Track Housing, clarifies contracting and funding authority for the program, allows Oregon Housing and Community Services to purchase land for affordable housing development, outlines funding preferences, changes language on state's contribution to properties from loans and grants to equity contribution to align with Article 10-11Q bond requirements, details Oregon Housing and Community Services legislative reporting requirement. You also have a -3 amendment in addition to the -2, which deletes reference to metropolitan statistical in definition of area median income. On both of the amendments, Madam Chair, you have no revenue impacts, but both amendments do have a fiscal impact and will need further consideration by the Committee on Ways and Means.
With that, we have invited testimony, Margaret Van Vliet.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Margaret Van Vliet. I'm the Director of Oregon Housing and Community Services Department. I will talk you through very quickly the House Bill 2198-2 and -3 amendments. But before I do that, I want to just take a minute or two and explain kind of the context for this bill. It's really a bill that accompanies a bonding bill. There is currently a proposal to spend $100 million in bonding capacity for new affordable housing being considered. That bill would use both Article 11Q general fund-backed bonds as well as lottery fund-backed bonds in the amount of $85 million and $15 million, respectively. These would be the $85 million in 11Q bonds would be a new source of funding for affordable housing in the state. And as such, 2198 is the vehicle that kind of provides some policy parameters or sideboards, if you will, for how the department would administer those funds and how it would provide accountability back to the legislature and delegates authority to do various policy deliberation and set more program guidelines to the Housing Stability Council. And so that's the two really go together. As for the housing bonding part of the proposal, we do know and have documented, I believe you have materials in OLIS that speak to the tremendous need for affordable housing across the state. And so the proposal would provide a substantial new vehicle to do that, and I can answer questions about that if the committee has them. But 2198, again, provides the policy parameters and sideboards. Specifically, it tells the department that if we receive these funds, we're to use them to create housing for families at or below 60% of the area median income. It asks us to pay attention to geographic diversity in distributing these funds and to think and to look deeply at areas of need and measure things like vacancy rates, degree of housing cost burden in different geographies across the state, and the general gap between the number of very low-income people and the availability of affordable apartments. It also asks us to look at other ways to reduce the overall costs of construction and production of units. This has been a theme that we've been paying attention to and we know is on the minds of many members. And finally, it tells us to link investments in other regional with other regional collaboratives, such as regional solutions teams, early learning collaboratives, and the like. The Dash 2 amendments, as you've heard, change the program name. More importantly, the Dash 2 amendments clarify the ability for this fund to be used to purchase land. We've heard from our development partners that the purchase of land and our ability to provide some land banking would be of considerable help to the development process. It also clarifies some technical pieces around the state's ownership or operation of the affordable units that are financed with this mechanism. And I want to say a quick word about that. Today, my agency uses a variety of sources, mostly from the federal government. We act very much like a public bank, and we provide financing to developers, both nonprofits and for-profits, to provide housing across the state. And we've done that for many years. But we have not traditionally taken an ownership role in the underlying housing. If we use 11Q bonds, the state's required to take an ownership position. So it's important to have the parameters by which that would happen spelled out. And so that's what this amendment does. And then the Dash 3 amendments make a very small technical change, again, to this definition of area median income. I'll pause there and be happy to answer any questions.
Representative Wilson.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for appearing today. I think we all know the true cost of housing is in the financing and the upkeep. And I don't know how many housing units that this is ultimately going to involve, but in that the state is for the first time ever going to be taking an ownership in apparently a whole lot of houses. I guess my question would be, what provisions are out there for the upkeep of these homes in perpetuity?
Madam Chair and Representative Wilson, it's a great question. What we would propose to do is not be an active landlord. Instead, we would execute contracts with housing providers, land, property management companies, private developers. And so that we would take an ownership role, we would not have to be 100% owner. And so there's some materials, including, I believe, a letter from the Department of Justice in OLIS that talk about the what the ownership would need to look like. But in effect, it can be less than full ownership, so we can be in sort of tenants in common arrangement. But the way we operate today when we provide financing, as I say, as a public bank does, we have regulatory agreements, we have compliance monitoring, we're very used to being able to track the financial performance, the physical condition, the regulatory compliance of the units that the state finances. And so in some ways, our role in this new source of funds will look very much like that. Now, we'll need to tailor the agreements very carefully because clearly, as an owner, we have a different set of rights and responsibilities. But DOJ and Bond Council have looked at this with us and have given us the initial sideboards, some of which are in 2198 and some of which won't be necessarily in statute, but they're provided in this side letter that DOJ has provided to us.
Madam Chair, just a quick follow-up then. So then as the years go on, is it fair to say then that at some point in time or due to some kind of hybrid ownership situation here, the state will not solely be on the hook for the upkeep of those homes?
Madam Chair and Representative Wilson, that's correct. What we'll want to be able to do is make sure that when we underwrite the financial structure and we analyze things like cash flow and income, and things of that nature, that there is adequate room for repairs and maintenance, for replacement reserves. That's in the normal course of our underwriting real estate, is something we know how to pay attention to, and we would expect to do likewise here. Over the long term, these would be bonds that would be amortized, if you will, over 20 or 30 years. The way they're in the budget, in the governor's budget, they're structured as 20-year bonds. So once the bonds are retired, then I think if we're approached by our partners and they want to buy us out, for example, I think there will be ways to do that. And so those are some things we'll want to navigate so that we're not necessarily having to be an owner in perpetuity.
Thank you.
Representative McClain.
Director, has the state ever used 11Q bonds for affordable housing before?
Madam Chair and Representative McClain, the answer is no, we have not.
So this is the $100 million bond that Governor Kitzhaber proposed for affordable housing.
Madam Chair and Representative McClain, that's correct.
Do you have any evidence that this is going to solve what is apparently, is going to solve a long-term affordable housing issues in the state?
Madam Chair and Representative McClain, this will not solve the problems. Our best estimates are that depending on a number of assumptions and the way we finally structure any transactions that we finance, we could produce between 3,000 and 4,000 new units. Some people estimate that the overall need for affordable apartments for the families that are low income that we're talking about is more in the neighborhood of 50,000 units statewide. And so it makes a difference. We see need in every community across the state. We think thousands of units are very much needed, and there's certainly a role for the state to do that. So this makes progress towards that, but it does not solve it. It will take the pressure off in many communities. I feel convinced of that.
Yes, Representative Kenemar.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess something that seems like a significant change in policy, and I'm interested in your feedback, is 60% of the area median income. I mean, 6 out of 10 families would qualify. That seems like a remarkably high number.
Madam Chair and Representative Kenemar, the 60% of area median income is the benchmark that we use for most of our federally funded programs as well. And what we know is that at that income level in most communities, rents are too high and they cannot, families earning that amount of income cannot afford rents in their area. There's a few exceptions, but by and large, people are forced to pay too much of their income for rent or they just simply can't find an apartment.
Follow up. So what is the 60th percent statewide at this point?
For
metropolitan area, too, if you've got both numbers in mind.
Madam Chair and Representative Kenemer, I'm going to be embarrassed to say the number is escaping me. I want to say it's for a family of four, it's around $40,000 or $45,000 a year is median, 60% of median. It is measured on a county-by-county basis, and those income figures are updated annually. And so statewide, I believe the average or that the 60% market is about $45,000 a year for a family of four.
Representative Gilliam.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for being here. I don't want to make you responsible for articulating the opposition to this bill, but to your knowledge and understanding of when this was heard in Human Services, to what extent do you believe that the amendments might address any concerns coming out of that committee?
Madam Chair and Representative Gilliam, I'm not exactly sure I know the answer to the question. What I would say to you is, since it was heard, we have done a great deal of outreach to our stakeholders and the partners that we rely on to do development and community-based work. They have offered a lot of suggestions, some of which we've been able to capture in these proposed amendments. Some of them are matters of implementation that we probably wouldn't want to put in statute. And so they've offered us other suggestions about how to do process, how to take, how to leverage other resources and other things that probably don't rise to the level of statute. So I'm not sure I'm answering the question, and it may be that I'm not fully understanding the question.
Most people don't understand my question.
I think Ms. Van Vliet, I think what my vice chair was asking is if you could address some of the I'm sure there were concerns because there were no votes coming out of the policy committee, and they had a deeper policy discussion than we've been able to have here, just by nature of the fact that they had more time to spend, and so we're kind of coming in blind. Could you articulate some of the concerns that you heard, and then let us know what you've been able to do to address any concerns that were brought up? Other concerns I know that you maybe couldn't address, and other issues will be dealt with in rulemaking. But if you could articulate some of that, that would be helpful.
Madam Chair, I'll do my best. The day that this was heard, it was fairly last minute. They did not take a lot of testimony. I would share that with you. They were also considering a different bill that raised concerns about our administration of something called the document recording fee. I believe that was House Bill 2959. There were concerns which we've addressed with changes in management at the agency. And I believe that the no votes were perhaps expressing concerns about a different matter, not with 2198 specifically.
Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. A couple of questions. Who will actually pay the homeowners insurance premiums for these properties? And will the purchase of the land itself for these many units, will that take these off the local tax rolls?
Madam Chair and Representative Wilson, two different issues there. We anticipate that this will be rental housing. While there is some possibility it could also be used for homeownership, I just want to draw that distinction. We're anticipating this is rental housing, not homeownership, although there's nothing about what we're doing here that would preclude homeownership. And we've talked, for example, about Habitat as a model. As to the question of insurance, what we'll want to do is make sure, as we do in other rental housing that we finance, that when we underwrite the income stream, the projected rents, and the operating expenses for the property, that there will be enough cash flow to pay for all the normal operating expenses, including repairs, maintenance, utilities, and insurance, and reserves. And that's sort of the normal way we underwrite. and that there's debt service coverage and so forth. And so we expect that those matters will be taken up in sort of in the operations of the underlying properties. I've already forgotten your second question.
The issue about would the state ownership of this property remove it from the tax rolls?
Madam Chair and Representative Wilson, it's my understanding that it would very likely remove it from the local tax rolls, yes. Yes, Representative Kenma.
Oh, thank you. You know, this seems like a rather substantial increase in rental properties, and I guess I'm having a hard time differentiating why we wouldn't go with some other plans that move towards ownership. Seems that we want people to have ownership of their properties, you know, income tax credits, reduced interest rates, subsidized interest rates, but things that would move people into an ownership position where they would accept more responsibility for the housing and ultimately benefit. You know, one of the things that I guess I feel strongly about is that I think it's an important social policy that rental be a transition, if possible, for people. I think there's a huge difference in owning property and renting it, both in the way you maintain it and also in the way one feels about it. And it just, this raises a program on this of this magnitude just raises a lot of questions about why we would select this direction in social policy.
Madam Chair and Representative Kennemer, I understand your question. What I would say to you, and we haven't had you haven't had the opportunity to hear from me about what the agency does and the range of programs.
No.
We do certainly also invest in a variety of home ownership programs through my agency. With respect to the proposed $100 million, and on the order of magnitude between 3,000 and 4,000 new units with this $100 million, what I would share with you is with the existing tools we have today, most of which, again, are federal, through a federal tax credit program, we produce about 1,300 units a year. Sometimes it's more, sometimes it's less. That's a combination of newly constructed rental housing and also the preservation or acquisition and rehab of existing properties. So this would increase our production over a couple of years beyond what we currently do today. But again,
by what measure?
So if we if today we are producing between 1,300 units a year, and over the next couple of years we do 4,000 units in total with this kind of an investment, it's a little more than double. So it's a big shot in the arm, if you will. What we know, again, is that when you compare the availability of affordable rentals, whether they're in apartments or single-family homes that are on the market today, compared to how many low-income families are out there looking, there's a gap of around 50,000 units. There are also gaps in the home ownership market, especially in that sort of first-time homeowner market, and we have a variety of tools, and I'd be happy to brief you on those and kind of the range of programs we do. And so I understand this is coming at you without the context of what else the department does using a variety of federal tools, and I'd be happy to give you more information about that.
Another question, yep. And a comment. Some thought creating condos instead of apartment units?
Madam Chair and Representative Kennemer, yes, I think that is among the things that's possible. I think we would get fewer units if we did that. And so I think those are the trade-offs that the legislature will, of course, be considering.
Madam Chair, if
yep.
I could just...
One more.
I guess I would like to visit with someone
okay.
at some length
I'd
about
be happy.
This.
Of course.
I didn't realize that I'm apparently out of the loop as much as I fear I may be. I just have... a lot of questions
sure,
about this,
of course.
And this isn't the appropriate forum, I guess.
I'm happy to come to speak with you or any
Thank
member,
you.
Of course.
Great. Okay, any other questions? Okay, with that, Vice Chair Smith-Warner, we're going to adopt some amendments and move this to Ways and Means where the financial discussion can continue. I also would encourage you to visit with other members here to answer questions as well as those members of Ways and Means. Thank you. Representative Smith-Warner.
Madam Chair, I move to adopt the Dash A2 amendment to House Bill 2198.
Vice Chair Smith-Warner has moved to adopt the Dash 2 amendments to House Bill 2198. Yes.
I have a question then. What does this change in definition from affordable housing, from dwelling units to residential housing mean? In the very first line here in the explanation of the Dash 2 amendment.
Madam Chair and Representative Kenemer, it's to align the language of housing with the other parts of statute that govern the programs that we administer. I would characterize that as a technical change just to align language within the statute.
Okay. With that is, yeah. Any? Yes. Representative McClain.
I noticed also this amendment is adding to the department's authority to conserve, operate, and dispose of property. That sounds to me like you're asking for the authority to get rid of any partners, and bottom line is run this as a public housing unit.
Madam Chair and Representative McClain, we want the broad authority, but I would say to you that our intent is not to be the frontline operators of housing. We have plenty of local public housing authorities and nonprofits and private sector developers and owners and managers of housing, and our agency has a history of being very careful and cautious about not competing with the private sector in that regard. I think there are times when, for example, periodically we have a large portfolio of loans. Periodically we have to do a foreclosure. We need the ability to dispose of real estate when we come into ownership in that way. And so I think the lawyers would say we need to have the ability to operate in the best interests of the state, but I would say it is not at all our intent to become a housing authority at the state level.
You know, I've had directors tell me before that language that we're giving them the authority, but it was certainly not their intent to do it. Do you want to hear all the agencies who have said that in the PR disasters that came years later when they did just what they said they weren't going to do?
I think you answered the initial question.
You want the authority, but you're saying you don't plan to use it.
If I heard you correctly, Ms. Van Vliet, she said, question. I know, but she can answer the question, but I believe she partially answered the question in saying we do need this authority for these purposes. That is our intention. But I think your point has been made. If you'd like to add to that, you're certainly welcome to.
Madam Chair and Representative McClain, in some regards, have to defer to the lawyers, and I don't want to hide behind the lawyers, but I will say to you, I feel confident that with all of the change that my agency has been through that you and I spoke about in the last session, and the direction I get from Governor Brown, it is very much our intent to be a facilitator of housing and not a direct owner and not a landlord. And that's, I mean, if there were other assurances I could give you, I'd certainly do so.
Okay, with that, any other discussion on this particular amendment? If not, Zoe, would you call the roll?
Representative Barnhart.
Aye.
Representative Kenmer.
No.
You said no.
Representative McLean.
No.
Aye.
Representative Rayfield?
Yes.
Representative Wilson?
No.
Vice Chair Gillen?
No.
Vice Chair Smith-Warner?
Aye.
Chair Hoyle?
Aye. With that, the motion passes.
Madam Chair,
Smith-Warner.
Thank you. Madam Chair, I move to adopt the Dash A3 amendment to House Bill 2198.
Vice Chair Smith-Warner has moved to adopt the Dash 3 amendment to House Bill 2198. Is there discussion?
Yeah.
I think you might have.
Is that true that, I mean, Representative Kinmer just talked about medium income. Are we taking that out?
Madam Chair and Representative McLean, no, we're not taking it out. The dash two inadvertently included a reference to the metropolitan statistical area in defining area median income, and MSAs are not a thing that exists statewide. It's just really in the metro areas. So we delete that reference so that it can be simply area median income.
Okay.
Okay. With that, Zoe, would you call the roll?
Representative Barnhart.
Aye.
Representative
Kenmer. No.
Representative
McClain. No.
Representative
Snows.
Aye.
Representative Rayfield.
Yes.
Representative Wilson.
No.
Vice Chair Gilliam.
No.
Aye. Chair
Hoyle. Aye. With that, the dash three, the motion passes. Representative Smith-Warner.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 2198A with a due pass as amended recommendation and be referred to Ways and Means.
Vice Chair Smith-Warner has moved House Bill 2198 with a due pass as amended recommendation and referred to Ways and Means. Is there discussion?
Madam Chair.
Yes.
The director suggested that she could meet with me. I'd sure like an update before I make a final vote on this. Obviously, I need to be updated, but I have some pretty significant concerns about this, and I wonder if it would be appropriate to postpone this until after I've had a chance to have that discussion.
Hey, if you would like to rescind your motion, we could hold this over till Wednesday when we will be voting on it. And I would ask that you visit the members of this committee if that's.
Thank you for that courtesy. Madam
Chair, I rescind my motion.
Vice Chair Smith-Warner has rescinded her motion. And with that, I will close the work session on House Bill 2198. Thank you very much. And we will see you back here on Wednesday. All right. With that, I will open a work session on House Bill 2730. Erin, will you describe the measure?
Thank you, Madam Chair. House Bill 2730, the underlying bill, requires Department of Transportation to study development of uniform speed bumps, height, and markings. You have a dash two amendment. It replaces the original measure and provides for the creation of a Portland Trailblazers vehicle registration plate. Imposes a surcharge of $20 per year registration and directs money from surcharge to Trailblazers Foundation. Provides for creation of breast cancer awareness vehicle registration plate. Imposes a surcharge of $20 per year of registration and directs Oregon Department of Transportation to transfer net proceeds to Oregon Health Authority Fund. Specifies that neither plate may be created or issued until the department receives amount necessary to cover costs of initiating plate program. Repeals statutes limiting number of specialty license plates that may be issued by ODOT. And directs them to establish a special registration program and provide for issuance of special registration plates to nonprofit groups. Specifies that if, once a plate is issued, ODOT does not issue 2,000 sets in 1 year, that particular set will cease production. Prohibits creation of new group registration plates as of the effective date of this measure. Allows transfer of group plates and veteran plates from one vehicle to another under process provided in current statute. There is an emergency clause on the measure. We did receive a fiscal impact statement on the measure. We are awaiting a revenue impact statement on the dash two amendment. With the combination of the revenue impact statement and the potential revenue impact statement and the fiscal impact statement, it will need to be considered by Ways and Means once we receive all the paperwork, Madam Chair.
So we will be waiting on the revenue impact. What I would like to do is adopt the amendment today and take short, so this would effectively, we would be voting on two license plates and changing the process so that of how license plates are approved, so that it is not in the legislature, but rather part of a formal, transparent, clear set of criteria and done through ODOT. But with that, I would like to bring up, first I think we need to adopt the dash two amendments and then we can bring people up.
Madam Chair, I move to adopt the dash two amendment to House Bill 2730.
Vice Chair Smith-Warner has moved to adopt the dash two amendment to House Bill 2730. Is there any discussion? Yes, Representative McLean.
Madam Chair, I'm a no on this because this is a bill that died in another policy committee that's once again
resurrecting in your Rules Committee. And I think we've already vetted it policy-wise, and it's imprudent to continue to bypass policy committees of origin.
Representative McLean, actually, it died in that particular policy committee, and both the chair and Representative Davis, who was working on it, asked if we could bring it to this committee to put it into a bill that had a broader relating clause to add the entire concept. So that's what we're doing, but fair enough. Thank you for registering the no vote. Representative Wilson.
Oh, just one thing.
Yeah.
I wasn't incorrect.
Well, I was explaining to you why this was brought here and requested by the policy committee people who were proponents of the bill.
But it did die in its committee of origin.
In its original form, not in this form. So, Representative Wilson.
Madam Chair, I do plan to support the adoption of the amendment, but I do want to say I am disappointed about not being able to study the speed bumps. I was kind of excited about being able to tell my constituents that I'd been involved in such an activity.
Excellent. Yes, Representative Barnhart.
Well, Madam Chair, I was hoping that I too would join with Representative Wilson in the hopes that he would actually test out these speed bumps using his motorcycle.
I believe that happened, Representative Barnhart. Representative Kettermer.
Madam Chair, I appreciate you bringing this bill forward and these amendments. I appreciate you're working with Representative Davis on this concept, and Representative McLean and I had the breast cancer bill that we had introduced, and I appreciate seeing it emerge in a different form.
It was the plan was to bring thank you, Representative Kettermer. And the plan was to bring the Blazers license plate bill through, but your testimony and the testimony of Representative McLean about why the breast cancer bill was so vitally important and what it meant to you moved not only that committee but many people in this building, and we wanted to make sure that if we were going to move a bill through that we did it with that. So I want to thank you for sharing that, and it's important. So with that, and again, I also want to speak to the work that Representative Davis and Representative McEwen did to actually get this process put together. It was pretty spectacular.
It was.
So with that, since we've done discussion, do you want to call the roll, Zoe?
Representative Barnhart.
Aye.
Representative Kettermer.
Aye.
Representative McLean.
No.
Representative Noakes.
Aye.
Representative Rayfield.
Yes.
Representative Wilson?
Aye.
Vice Chair Dillian?
Aye.
Vice Chair Smith Warner?
Aye.
Chair Hoyle?
Aye. The motion passes. With that, Amy Joyce, just now that the motion passed, does anybody have questions from ODOT as to what the process will be? Because we will be voting on this on Wednesday. Anyone at all? No, just slowly, sit back down.
Just to be certain I understand.
Yeah. Yes.
I think the amendment that we just passed essentially does away with the study bill and inserts these license plate programs instead. Did I get that
exactly
right?
Exactly right.
Thank you.
Do you want her to describe what that is?
No, I'm happy to vote the bill out of committee when it gets there. I'm not at all certain about voting for a couple more license plates in Oregon. I'm going to think about that before I vote on the floor. Thank you.
Well, Representative Barnhart, thank you. And sometimes you got to take the good with the bad, and and changing this process for the better means that we get two license plates that I think a lot of people really care about.
And just to make it clear, yes. Madam Chair, I'm not talking about the content of these particular license plates. I guess I am personifying former Representative Terry Beyer in my thinking on this particular issue, if you'll recall.
Oh, yes. And I have to say, Representative Barnhart, I also am not a fan of license plates, but was utterly convinced on these two by the proponents. With that, Representative Gilliam.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just to be clear, we're doing both in the amendment, correct?
Yes, Representative.
You're changing the policy and approving these.
Yes.
I am glad to have said yes to the amendment. Mm-hmm. I have to say on record, and I'll say it again on the floor, I am a fan of license plates. The more, the merrier. And if law enforcement has no difficulty with identifying folks in situations where they need to, I want us all to pause for a minute. And I don't think this is critical of your thinking, Madam Chair. I loved when you said what you said about the appeal of those two license plates. I've been quite enamored and passionate about license plates in the past that have been brought to me. And I think it's a wonderful connection to great causes in our state. I think Representative Beyer was a outstanding representative. I couldn't disagree with her more. She hated these. I love them. I would like to have more campaigns and more creative license plates. And I am pleased to work on these two and to speak against transferring this over, even though you framed me by talking about how much transparency there was. I disagree, and I wish we would keep our authority and ability to promote great causes through license plates.
Thank you, Representative. And as I said to Representative Barnhart, sometimes you have to take the good with the bad. It's just your good is his bad and vice versa, and so be it.
But one follow-up, yes. If I might.
Yes.
Uh-oh.
To your point, the good ends.
No, it just moves to ODOT, Representative. That's all.
And
with that, we thought we may have delayed long enough for the revenue statement to get here, but it has not. But I will take one more statement from Representative Kenemer.
Thank you. I especially appreciate you doing this. I think license plates are a good way to send a message. And Representative McLean and I both shared about personal losses with regard to complications from breast cancer. And the amazing thing is that my wife, my first wife who passed away some 18 years ago, would probably be a survivor today. And a lot of that is dependent on awareness. And I don't know of many better and less expensive ways to create awareness than have this on the license plates and lots of cars. And I just think it's an important issue. And we finally just about have a cure. In her case, it was miraculous. She was expected to live a matter of months and was a very tough lady who worked at it hard. And there were new medications coming out all the time. She lasted 8.5 years. So I think today she would be a survivor. And I just think there are a lot of ladies that deserve that opportunity. And this would help make that happen.
Thank you so much, Representative. With that, I'm going to close the work session of House Bill 2730, and we will have the revenue statement back on Wednesday when we will move that to Ways and Means. With that, I will open up a work session on House Bill 2995. Erin, describe the measure, please.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2995 requires transportation network companies to maintain insurance policies to cover private passenger motor vehicles when the vehicle's registered owner or a designated operator is actively participating as a driver for the transportation network company. You have a -4 amendment. It requires transportation network companies to maintain primary insurance for each participating driver, specifies coverage requirements for insurance for following instances: when participating driver is connected to network and available to receive requests but not engaged in providing ride, and when engaged in providing a prearranged ride, and uninsured motorist and underinsured coverage and personal injury protection coverage. Specifies that policy may not require or be dependent upon denial of a claim or any other insurance policy, and must provide coverage beginning with the first dollar of claim. Requires driver to carry proof of insurance at all times by operating vehicle while connected to transportation network. Prohibits requiring or incentivizing participating driver from maintaining insurance that covers risks related to or arising from activities of participating driver while connected to network. Requires transportation network companies to disclose in writing information regarding the insurance requirements. Allows personal automobile and insurance policies to exclude coverage for losses occurring while operating as part of transportation network company. Outlines responsibilities in the event of a motor vehicle accident or claims coverage investigation. There's an emergency clause on the -4 amendment. You also have a -5 amendment. The -5 amendment requires governor to convene work group to advise on development and implementation of statewide insurance standard applying to all commercial vehicles that provide transportation services. It specifies issues for work group to review and evaluate. Requires report to the Oregon Department of Transportation, Department of Consumer and Business Services, and interim committees of Legislative Assembly related to transportation no later than January 13th, 2016. The -5 Amendment 2 has an emergency clause on it. On the -4 Amendment, Madam Chair, you have a no revenue, no fiscal impact. However, on the -5 Amendment, you have a no revenue and there is a fiscal impact as this does create a work group and therefore will need to be referred to Ways and Means should you adopt the -5 Amendment along with the -4 Amendment.
Okay, colleagues, it is my intention to have us adopt the -4 and -5 amendment and move this bill to Ways and Means. I do believe that there will be some further work done down there. There are some, I think there may be some more amendments when that moves to Ways and Means, but with that, I would accept a motion, Representative Smith-Warner.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, I move to adopt the -4 amendment to House Bill 2995.
Vice Chair Smith-Warner has moved to adopt the -4 amendments to House Bill 2995. Is there discussion? Is there objection? Yes. Can you call the roll, Zoe?
Barnhart.
Aye.
Representative Kenmer.
Aye.
Representative Noakes.
Aye.
Representative
Rayfield. Yes.
Representative Wilson.
Aye.
Vice Chair Gilliam.
Aye.
Vice Chair Smith-Warner.
Aye.
Chair Hoyle.
Aye. With that, the -4 amendments are adopted. Representative Smith-Warner.
Madam Chair, I move to adopt the -5 amendment to House Bill 2995.
Vice Chair Smith-Warner has moved House Bill has moved the -5 amendments to House Bill 2995. Is there discussion? Is there objection? Yes. Call the roll, please, Zoe.
Representative Barnhart.
Aye.
Representative Kenmer.
Aye.
Representative McLean.
No.
Representative
Noakes. Aye.
Representative Rayfield.
Yes.
Representative Wilson.
Aye.
Vice Chair Gilliam.
Aye.
Vice Chair Smith-Warner.
Aye.
Chair Hoyle.
Aye. With that, the -5 amendments have been adopted. Representative Smith-Warner.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 2995 with a do pass as amended recommendation and be referred to Ways and Means.
Vice Chair Smith-Warner has moved the House Bill 2995 with a due passes amended recommendation be referred to Ways and Means. Is there discussion? Yes, Representative Barnhart.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This bill has had a lot of work done on it. I didn't do any of it, but I'm very pleased to see that we're actually moving ahead on a statewide bill that establishes insurance requirements. And that we'll establish a study to figure out how we ought to proceed in the future. When you're dealing with new business systems and concepts, you got to move along nimbly, and I think this bill allows us to do that.
Thank you, Representative Barnhart. Representative Gilliam.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have done most of the work on this bill, and it is why we are at a deadlock. And I seriously do hope that we can work this out. I think we can get there. I'm glad we're not going to belabor here, and I pray that our Ways and Means colleagues will move it along.
Yes, Representative Kenmare.
Yeah, Madam Chair, I originally was a sponsor of the bill. I'm disappointed we haven't found more common ground, and I'll not be supporting it today.
Okay, fair. With that, Zoe, please call the roll.
Representative Barnhart.
Aye.
No.
Representative Noakes.
Aye.
Representative Rayfield.
Yes.
Representative Wilson.
No.
Vice Chair Gilliam.
Aye.
Vice Chair Smith Warner.
Aye.
Chair Hoyle.
Aye. With that, the motion passes. Close the work session on House Bill 2995. Open a work session on House Bill 3300. Erin, will you describe the measure?
And Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 3300 requires primary care physicians to serve a specified percentage of medical assistance recipients in order to contract with the Public Employees Benefit Board or Oregon Educators Benefit Board to provide medical care, requires Oregon Health Authority to calculate percentage for each county and report to the boards. You have a dash two amendment. The dash two amendment was presented by Representative Lively on May 8th. The dash two amendment requires primary care physicians in Lane County accept as patients the number of medical assistance recipients sufficient to constitute 15% of a physician's total number of patients in order to contract with the Public Employees Benefit Board or the Oregon Educators Benefit Board to provide medical care. It requires PEB and OEBB report to legislature no later than February 1, 2019 regarding how this measure has increased medical recipients' access to timely primary care in Lane County. You have a no revenue impact. We did receive a fiscal impact on the measure, and the measure does need to be considered by Ways and Means.
Representative Smith Warner.
Madam Chair, I move to adopt the dash two amendment to House Bill 3300.
Vice Chair Smith Warner has moved the dash to adopt the dash two amendments to House Bill 3300. Is there discussion? Zoe, would you call the roll?
Representative Barnhart.
Aye.
Representative Kenmer.
Aye. Aye.
Representative Rayfield?
Yes.
Representative Wilson?
No.
Vice Chair Gilliam?
Aye.
Vice Chair Smith Warner?
Aye.
Chair Hoyle?
Aye. With that, the dash two amendment is adopted. Yes.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 3300 with a do pass as amended recommendation, and the measure be referred to Ways and Means.
Vice Chair Smith Warner has moved House Bill 3300 with a do pass recommendation and that the measure be referred to Ways and Means. Is there a discussion? Yes, Representative Barnhart.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I remember the hearing well, and also the reality that in Lane County we've been faced with a shortage of primary care physicians. It will be very interesting to see whether this bill has the effect that we're hoping it will have, and whatever effect it has, it will help us to figure out where we go from here in managing at least this one aspect of our healthcare system. I expect the legislature is going to be involved in this process for a long time.
Thank you. Any other discussion? Yes.
I'm going to have trouble with the quota portion. I think it's good to do an experiment, and I like to see what happens, but I have real questions about the appropriateness of this methodology.
We'll see.
Yes, that's fair. All right, with that, Zoe, will you call the roll?
Representative Barnhart.
Aye.
Representative Kenmark.
No.
Representative McLean.
No.
Representative Noakes.
Aye.
Representative Rayfield.
Yes.
Representative Wilson.
No.
Vice Chair Gilliam.
Aye.
Vice Chair Smith Warner.
Aye.
Chair Hoyle.
Aye. With that, the motion passes. Close the work session on House Bill 3300. And only announcement is that.
And Madam Chair, I just want to be clear as to everything we've carried over from today to Wednesday. We have carried over the work session on House Bill 2198. We have carried over the work session on 2730. We have carried over the work session on House Bill 3225 and on House Bill 3470. And these will all be rescheduled on Wednesday, May 20th.
All right. And we will be meeting on Thursday, May 21st in lieu of Friday. With that, meeting is adjourned. Thank you.
3 p.m. Thursday. Did you say in lieu of Friday? Did you say in lieu of
3 p.m. Thursday?